I was dreaming about apples, and I scratched my head, and I'm like, let me turn TV on and see if anything happened. I turned it on, and it was all still the same. So yeah, that was sad for a day, but.
If only you'd invested more time in raising your vibration.
Right?
Yeah.
They'll fix it for us all the
time. Oh, yeah, they got it covered. Not to worry.
It says ongoing Thursdays. Maybe that'll be the new thing over there on Thursday. Till everybody gets tired of listening to each other or something.
That is the new thing.
All right, so enlighten us, Jeff.
It's on me now, huh?
Have a beer.
It's all on you.
On me.
They do with the rocking chair.
My goodness.
Oof. That sucks. Got a teepee and no rocking chair.
That chair looks pretty comfy. County sends the case to Maryland. Maryland enforces it. It could be Ben Forno.
Mm-hmm.
He says he's going to disappear.
Mm-hmm.
Way to go.
Right. That's his response to his adult life. It was that easy, huh? what do you want? You want a spiritual lecture?
Yes, please.
Fuck.
Channel someone.
Really?
Stupid John.
Channel Ian Anderson.
Somebody up here in the hour.
Sing Cross-Eyed Mary.
Here, we're both laying down. Do a guided meditation.
Guided meditation?
You are feeling sleepy.
You are feeling sleepy.
My vibration's raising already.
No.
Contact high.
Well, the perennial challenge for the serious aspirant you could say has to do with the context of identity, sense of identity. We know that it's pretty clear that my life experience is all about me. And what appears in all about me can sometimes be pleasant or neutral or despairing. And we're imbued with the you could say the miraculous gift or capacity of suggestibility, concocting the story, a genesis of myself. So you could say, the outgassing of a miraculous capacity to imbue experience with a story about myself, then, you know, one remains, right, at the center of their, remains as and at the center of their experience. Casually so. And when the day is going by in the way that it goes by, and there's nothing in particular leaning on your attention, then your relationship with yourself is casual. It's not insufferable. It's not great, but you don't mind that it's not great, because it's not insufferable. And that's casual. No one's seeking really hard when their experience of themselves is casual. When our experience starts leaning in when the needle starts hitting, you know, insufferable, then, you know, all kinds of reaction can occur. Victimization and, you know, depression and foreboding and apprehension and the pursuit of remedies, raising one's vibration, getting advice from experts in the field, which is the same structure of all about me, but rather than being neutral, it's insufferable, and so there's a motivation for amelioration. And then if the needle's heading in the direction of, like, this is the shit, that's, again, all about me. In the context of, you know, sensuality. Which can be kind of thrilling, but there's also, you know, lurking underneath the thrill of pleasant experience is the grief of its loss. Or that it's, you know, it's just not substantial enough to take us out. Why is it that when we're on the insufferable side of the equation, it's like a really, really, really big deal, and I'm not going to survive this? But when we're on the ecstatic side of the equation, we just don't have the same commitment to it. You know, it's like fleeting.
You want that.
Well, because when it's all about me, when it's all about me and my sensual experience, my spiritual experience, my emotional experience, my lust for security, then, you know, both the needle that points toward despair and the needle that points toward ecstasy are, well, they're just unsatisfactory. Primarily unsatisfactory. because they occur within a greater field, which is the myth of self. We're in a dependency relationship with consciousness and with the movement of the luscious sensuality that appears in consciousness from the vantage point of being individuated and of the nature of time. So whether you're having despair or ecstasy, as long as you are individuated and of the nature of time, it's just not good enough. But we can remain under this illusory malaise, seductive illusory malaise, for an entire lifetime, if not a half a dozen of those, or a baker's dozen. You sign up for 12, you get 13 crappy lifetimes, or 108 lifetimes. Yeah. You see, the presence of even pleasant sensual experience, which may also include, celebrity if you're interested, or mastery if you're interested in that, or expression and within the social structure if you're interested in that, or wealth and security if you're interested in that, or born into it, or whatever your karma happens to be. Even with the even with evidence of success and security, that's not enough either. That's also unpleasant and insufficient. It becomes a prison of its own, of its own making.
What the fuck?
So you begin to recognize, perhaps first in the greater social experiment, you notice the insatiability of humans. You notice the great insatiability and perhaps the great disappointment, the great unpredictability of humans, especially if they, in like a dramatic case when a lot of humans manage to elect a narcissistic sociopath as their paternalistic, authority figure for the good of the nation, if not the good of the world. As if xenophobia and misogyny and accusation and anger and threat are to be lauded as the way to go. All of which you could say is kind of a psychic reaction to a deeper impoverishment. The impoverishment of the white supremacist male, the impoverishment of people that live in, actual poverty or lack of education, lack of self-esteem. Or the impoverishment that's, you could say, imposed upon the greater society by the oligarchical class that siphons wealth and dignity and, legitimacy from the greater constituency. the great siphoning of wealth, authority, power, dignity. So there's a tremendous, you know, sublimated rage that's present. And, I mean, did the Muslims create this rage? Did the Mexicans create this rage? Did the Jews create this rage? Did women create this rage? No. It's endemic. So within the, you know, the simple personal matrix of despair, when the needle turns toward despair, or the needle turns towards neutral, or the needle turns towards ecstasy, there's something still, you know, annoyingly unsatisfactory about human experience as long as we are in a dependency relationship with consciousness as a creature. But it's a whole brand new conversation when you start to feel the texture of your experience from, let's say, a more subtle point of view. Because as long as you're the creature, you're just going to remain under the influence of that myth. And your hunger for more and better experience will not abate. You're insatiable. And being insatiable, we will concoct gods and demons, villains and thieves, you know, monsters and saints to lead us out of mayhem. Which makes the, you could say, which makes the mayhem, well, you know, worse, more cluttered. Somewhere along the line, something opens you up to, you know, call it a deeper kind of lust. A certain kind of sacred urgency to get out from under the annoying implications of yourself. And this is this becomes an invitation, you know, in one's life, so-called, to reconsider your priorities, reconsider the weave of your own consciousness. And it's no easy task to respond to that invitation. Yeah. the inertia or grip of the myth of the creature is not easy to break. And as much as we may want to enjoy or perceive a subtler, perceive in a subtler fashion, the orientation of being a creature in time is, well, understandably very tenacious. When, you know, teachers and systems make promises, whether it's the TM promise or the Byron Katie promise or the Jeannie Zandi promise or the Peter Brown promise, or the promise of the church, or the promise of the politician, you know, we're already down... we're already enrolled in, and we're, you know, going down a path of frustration, because we remain once again in a dependency relationship with who's making the promise and what the promise is supposed to deliver to me as a creature in time. Yeah, which is, you know, less suffering and more. Whatever, more autonomy, more spiritual mood. Or, you know, enviable magical powers of some kind. To, you know, enroll yourself or participate in something that makes no promise doesn't make any sense. First to you, and then, of course, to whatever friends and family might catch wind of that, you know, might be spending time in something that makes no promise. It's just, you know, anti-God or something.
I've never quite looked at things, stuff that way, like, you know, in terms of the promise. And just real quick, if you go through it, good, like everything is a promise.
It's a, you know... You're being seduced, manipulated, cajoled, and
but
you know,
you're even doing it too in friendships, relationships, employment,
nonstop. I mean, your own, even in the privacy of your own neutral consciousness, you're responding to some kind of come on. You know, the promise of, I don't know, a new piece of clothing or the next meal or task. Getting tasks done that you've put off for a long time, or a glass of wine, a lovely conversation, you know, an appointment made and kept. This is insatiable. It's just insatiable, which is not, you know, necessarily bad. It's just, fuck. It's just insatiable. That's all. But even in, you know, the insatiability and the occasional satisfaction of that insatiability or frustration of that insatiability, it, you can see it never quits. It just won't quit. It doesn't matter from moment to moment whether your fondness for the next moment is satisfied or not satisfied. Because you're always on to the next thing. You know, that's why mindfulness practice in the way that it's, you know, taught, constructively so, encourages the practitioner to be what's present. You know, mindful is being present, which if it's working for you, it can tone down, turn the volume down on insatiability. That's why, you know, some methods use breath or whatever just to turn the volume down on the random nature of virtual insatiability and become just ordinarily conscious in of presence, that which is felt, back to the breath. Daydream, back to the breath, slowing down. And you can become quite masterful at this technique, and of course many techniques. But you might notice that even successful application of these, you know, contemplative techniques, well, it's very easy for them to be experienced within the needle structure of, mm-hmm. right, despair, neutral, or, you know, pleasant. Because the mindfulness practice is, well, it's done from the context of the insufferable me and the sincere wishes that through the practice, the insufferable me will quiet the fuck down. Not that many people are really aiming for stream entry or arhanthood or Buddhahood.
What's arhanthood?
Well, in the, you know, the grand myth of some Buddhist, right, articulation is, call it progressive levels of, you know, accomplishment. Because consciousness is insatiable and it is always a mile away. No matter how far you get, it's always a mile away. Yeah. Oof, it's a bear. So on a journey that may include, you know, one or many spiritual practices and meetings with ordinary and remarkable persons and successful and failed relationships and everything else you can find in a life, if you're lucky, if it's your, you know, karmic good fortune, some other quality of intelligence begins to, you know, open up. And this quality of intelligence that begins to open up is, well, it's, you know, it's radical. It's dangerous. It's radical and dangerous to the creature. Because this other, you know, call it dimension of intelligence, texture of intelligence, well, it's capable of cutting through the myth of the creature at hand. Not as the consequence of anything. See, the creature likes a practice. But this other quality of intelligence is not going to be seduced by practice or the myth of accomplishment. So that which has always been a mile away starts to get closer. And that's what you thought you wanted all this time. But as it gets closer, you start to get freaked out. Because it once you realize that, you know, you thought you were chasing it, but it was really just tracking you. And then at some point it starts coming in closer and you're like, no, this was much easier when I was chasing you. Right? Now you're being stalked. And this thing that you were chasing and chasing and chasing all of a sudden turned around and it started heading your way and you're like, no. You know, no, it was much safer when I was chasing you, but when it starts chasing you back, that's now you're fucked.
Yeah, but then what if you just let it eat you?
Well, that's the idea. That's right. That's the idea.
But pride won't eat you. It'll eat you, spit you back out.
Yeah. One's reliance on life experience as a continuity begins to go through, a fundamental upheaval. The nuisance of insatiability mutates. Mutates into immersion. It's the same. Call it the same reality as if there were one. But it's so strange that the same, very same reality can be felt as insatiability. Unsatisfactory. And the same reality can also become an impossible to resist immersion. As freedom from self. Same fucking reality. It can portray itself as the nuisance of insatiability. And curiously, it can portray itself as immersion. Insatiability is made out of wanting and time. And immersion is the cessation of wanting and time. the sense of self, right, as an individuated entity or person or body living a life story, having an ample amount of self-will and decision-making, breaks up, erodes. And immersion replaces insatiability, you could say, concurrently with the gradual, fitful, or sudden evaporation of self. And this can't be apprehended through metaphor, right? The myth of one's life is an apprehension that occurs by virtue of metaphor. How am I doing? Where am I going? What are my plans? How do I feel? Who's hurt me? Whom have I hurt? I like that person at that meeting. Oh, I shouldn't get involved in a relationship right now. I've only got my 3-month chip. Damn it. I just so want to qualify once again my neurosis, you know, with the perfect foil. So if something like, you know, mindfulness or whatever shows up in your life, or, you know, crystal worship, channeling and stuff like that, you know, you've been invited to participate in and pursue something that is, you know, more endearingly, more reliably satisfying to you. You know, as if you should fill your psychic closet with, you know, guides and ascended masters. See, as the creature, we don't like being alone necessarily, or lonely. So, I mean, you know, it's great to have Jesus as a pal, as a running buddy, you know, riding shotgun, or Master Moria, or, you know, whatever spirit guide might show up at a channeling session that has been looking after you since you were a tiny tot. Tom Hanks had Wilson. Created and imbued Wilson with a very interactive persona. It's no, you know, it's no simple task to travel a pathless path of the cessation of creaturehood. And, you know, most crystal worshipers, you know, they're not really ready or interested in it. As even for discussion purposes, because there's so much, you know, luscious pride in the sensuality of being that you know, you I don't want to give myself up. I'm winning. You know, sufficiently so that I can handle the suffering that comes my way, and I've got a positive attitude, and I have the power of choice and decision making, and I have, you know, crystals and incense and antlers and good friends and ritual, and I can get through this. We are all one. I'm a spiritual being having a human experience. Marianne Williamson is right about everything. If only I could live as evangelically and fearlessly as she does.
You just said that on YouTube.
Did I?
I don't know, did you?
I think so. Am I going to get sued or something? I don't think so.
Oh, no, I wasn't thinking of it that way.
Oh.
You know, so. Public declaration.
A little edit there. And you're like, oh.
Yeah, that was my declaration. I had the good privilege of meeting Marianne.
Like, did you have a chance to talk one-on-one for a few, or?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
We're not together. Didn't work out. Yeah. Hey, I got a mala from Ramdas with a thread from one of Neem Karoli Baba's blankets. I mean, you know, I've been around. I have.
Street cred.
I got some street creds, enviable icons of spiritual progress. Oh yeah. I might even have Prahlad Brahmachari's tooth. Or hair. Which I have eaten during hard times. I'm such a loser. It's kind of relieving to see that nothing about you is enviable. It's a great load off. All of your devotion is turned into shit. Nobody likes you, not even your guru. Uh, absolute liquidation, you know, has its pluses. Nobody wants absolute liquidation. You wouldn't sign up for it. You'd be crazy. But once it turns and starts stalking you, good luck trying to get away from it. Oh, fuck. You see the urgency and insatiability of becoming. You can just see it, you know, in yourself or people that you encounter, right? And it's fine, you know, it's the organic lust of being, you know, it's the celebratory lust of, I'm here. You know, it's wonderful. I mean, makes the world go round. I mean, you have to have a high birth rate if you're going to have a successful genocide. You know, otherwise it wouldn't be worth killing all those people. Liquidation is, it ain't human. You don't necessarily, you know, become all that helpful.
Oh, nice.
You know, or nice, or compassionate, or anything. You might be, you know, less inclined to exploit people's suffering by offering them false gods in exchange for money. Now, the physicists that are cool or onto this stuff, they may not have a, you know, call it a spiritual or sacred or, you know, egoic bent when it comes to peering into the nature of reality. But there's a certain kind of, you know, I'd like to think there's a certain kind of freedom that occurs in the experience of, call it a scientist, a physicist, whatever, you know, cosmologist, that starts to notice that there is no secularly existing universe. That you're not a function of space or a function of time, that you're not individuated, you know, as a body. They, you know, get a true and radical glimmer of, who knows what to call it, you know, consciousness is fine. It's a throwaway term. It's, you know, 10-cent word. the gift of liquidation is not what one would not refer to as an attainment. And that, you know, gift of liquidation is intimately exactly what this is. Just what this is. There's not a beyond. Elsewhere from here. Elsewhere from this. This is the beyond. Beyond what, though? You see, as the conviction of the creature as a space-time function begins to, you know, melt or ease up, then present experience is not obtained through the lens of that creature as the insatiable at the ongoing attempt to remedy insatiability. Yeah, so the subtle motivating factors of keeping yourself interested, busy, and in the game, winning and secure, they become much less compelling. We could say mind is the ongoing dialogue of implication. The myth of continuity is the dialogue of implication. There was something before now. There is now. Something will come after this. But nothing ever actually comes after this. And you can't find what came before either, except through imagination, through metaphoric assignment, which is mind as the presentation of implication. Because you're a creature in time. If you're not a creature in time, and you're not the product of anything, and nothing at all has any implication, deal with it. Or not. To glimpse that you're not a product or outcome of your own biology. Well, it's kind of interesting. Maybe really terrifying or unsettling. But at least it's not that terribly difficult to get at least, you know, a hint of it, right? A taste of it. If present experience has no implication, no genesis, if you're not constructing, you know, a sense of continuity through mind and memory, presuming future and presuming implication. Then what?
I'm just kind of sitting here.
Yeah. Lucidity as the irrefutability of present experience is, you know, lit. But it has no content. It has no object. And whatever that is or isn't, you know, that can be spoken about, but not all that gracefully, really. Whatever that is or isn't is, you know, just not, what could you say, flicker on and off. Is not dependent upon how you think or how you feel. You find yourself, you could say, out from under the reflex, the mental reflex, the emotional, spiritual, somatic reflex of, you know, self-assignment as a creature.
Out of the habit of self-assignment as a creature amongst all of the self-assigning creatures.
Yep. It's a fucking zombie apocalypse out there. Yeah.
So, but then you gotta, well, you don't gotta do nothing, but then you gotta, you know, play the game and be.
Well, this game's been playing,
like,
this game's been playing you.
Self-assigned creature.
Right? This game's been playing you.
Well, yeah, okay.
Since before you can remember.
Yeah.
And it's playing you quite well. It's playing you so well that it's, you know, made you believe that you have something to do with it. Or that you could possibly be a beneficiary of it somehow. So once this magical thing starts chasing you, you know, for all this time it's tracking you and you're a mile away, and then it's like, you know, starts getting closer and closer and you're like, oh, fuck. Then if it catches up with you, and it will. It will catch up with you. No question about it. It's really hard to convince yourself of what the fuck is going on or how to conduct yourself in, you know, the bounty of life. You know, you could say instead of being the outcome, the creature is an outcome, right? You're the outcome of the Big Bang and, you know, molecules, minerals, atoms, and photons, and the you know, the amorous insatiability of your parents that culminated in a most memorable orgasm that begat you. Simultaneous, perhaps. I doubt it, but maybe. I mean, a love fest. You know, you were conceived in an absolute love fest. Ecstatic love fest. So you're the consequence now of, you know, that amorous event.
Well, an ecstatic love fest, or... God, are you done yet?
Yeah. Really. Yeah, really. I gotta get up early. So something shifts from you being the outcome of miraculous events to being the principle itself. You are this. Right? The creative principle itself. The unmanifest emptiness and form principle itself. You're the principle. You're not an outcome. You're not a symptom. But you can't say much about the principle. Because, you know, the principle on its terms has no symptoms. It just has none. It really has no symptoms. And yet, not a moment goes by that it's not merely, not just merely fecund, but also completely actualized, expressively actualized, as more symptoms than you know what to do with. So in the midst of a cornucopia of symptoms, there's nothing at all. That's the principle. That's you. As the creature, you are, you know, enamored of symptoms because consciousness finds things. If consciousness finds something, what's its reaction? Goody! Yeah. Goody, goody. Look what I found. So it, you know, it self-animates. Consciousness, not that there is any, self-animates through the finding. Which is being inebriated with symptoms. And why not? I mean, symptoms rock. Symptoms are the shit. I could live a life. It could amount to something. But you're also, you know, the principle. And it has no symptoms. It has no motive. It has no agenda. It's not existent. The principle's not existent. Its symptoms make it appear existent, but the principle is not existent. Or let's say it's not bound by, right? What we conceive of as the evidence of existence. Yeah. The power of, you know, metaphor and anecdote and story and space-time and creature, consequence, implication. You know, good luck. Good luck getting out from under the ferocious psychic pressure of being a symptom and feeling symptoms all the time, regardless of what state you may be in. So this then becomes a symptom factory, and you are, you know, a packet, an individuated packet of symptoms. And your needle goes from neutral to deplorable to I'm the shit and back again. Unsatisfactorily, but still profoundly, for the duration of your so-called life and perhaps beyond that, who knows? We'd have to ask Wayne Dyer. He's not talking.
I've never been called an individuated packet of symptoms.
Yeah, really? That's a compliment. Hmm. Huh. And the symptoms, you know, are fast and furious and fascinating, fractal, holographically fractal, and suggest sensation. And that sensation, the arising of sensation, suggests the body. And the composite we call the body, which is a fractal, holographic fractal of the rush of sensation, easily becomes my body. I, me, my, the recipient of so many symptoms, most of which I am committed to outwitting. Good luck. So it's possible, you know, I don't know if it's rare or not, doesn't really matter, but it's possible to, you know, delve into the evidence before you. Exhibit A. You know, the irrefutability of this miraculous field of insatiable symptoms, suggesting that you are the consequence of something other than you, which was here before you were. But that might not be true. And if you are invited by mysterious forces that, you know, might like to see you wake up, whatever that implies, then, you know, invariably you respond to that invitation. Then you go through, you know, cathartic movements, let's call them. Cathartic and shamanic movements. That unend you. And perhaps you find great humor in the scuttling of your ship, in the revelation that you have become useless, irrelevant, and without utility.
You know, but in the nature of creaturehood, you know, sometimes what did you just say, the useless whatever, is freeing.
Yep.
Just like.
Yep.
Anyway.
Nobody here. Yeah. Keep moving. Nobody here. Don't try this at home. We're professionals. Sweet, miraculous silence. released from the pressure, the pressure field of symptoms. So that was the lecture. Any questions?
When did you shave your beard?
Or why? I don't know. I just trimmed it back, and it'll.
I think it'll the last time again. I saw you was
puffy. Yeah. You know, I try to.
Wanted to visit the skin under there or something?
Yeah, who knows? See how much, skin cancer might be growing underneath there. Yeah, I try to, floss semi-annually. do some kind of hygiene. Do you want to make a contribution to Pebble Hill? Thanks for joining us, everyone. We're going to end now, and we appreciate all of you that are viewing the program from the comfort of your own home. Mm-hmm.